I'm Virginia Prescott, back with On Second Thought from GPB. Access to fresh, healthy food is not a given in Georgia. The U.S. Department of Agriculture tracks areas that are low income and have limited access to grocery stores. Those are also referred to as food deserts. Well, this month, GPB News is looking into creative local solutions to access issues in a series called Full Plates, How Georgia Fights Hunger. Today, we're hearing from two reporters who dug into what two communities are doing to get fresh food to residents. First up, GPB's Emily Jones, who found that zoning laws have a lot more to do with hunger than we might think. And she's joining us from our Savannah Bureau. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning, Virginia.
So your story looks at city zoning laws. How did that connect, that government function, with shopping for food?
So the basic idea here is, you know, food deserts don't just happen organically. They're not a natural phenomenon. They arise because of a whole bunch of decisions that a whole bunch of people make, both governments and others, you know, over the course of decades and decades, that turn neighborhoods into places that grocery stores don't see as an attractive place to open a grocery store. Not enough people live there. Other businesses have failed. So zoning is a piece of that. Something else we hear a lot about, redlining, which prevented over, again, a long period of time, loans and investment from going into certain neighborhoods, usually minority neighborhoods. So all kinds of decisions like that over the course of decades is what actually created food deserts. You know, they're not, as I said, a natural phenomenon. So, you know, it can take some government solutions to get grocery stores back into those places.
Well, I'd love to hear your story on this and get to more questions later. Here is what you filed for what Savannah is doing to address food deserts.
Marsha Buford is driving around her neighborhood, West Savannah, pointing out the stores.
Our boundary comes all the way down to this railroad track. Mm-hmm. And there's a convenience store, gas station. You got a convenience store over here. There's another convenience store. I'm not sure how we classify shoes, but I think it's called a supermarket. There's nothing super about the market, okay?
Notice a pattern? This majority black neighborhood is just under 2 miles from the shining gold dome of Savannah City Hall. But the nearest grocery stores are more than 2.5 miles away.
Hey, Lilybell!
Buford is president of the Neighborhood Association, so she knows a lot of people and greets them as we drive by.
I was bringing her through the neighborhood to show her we don't have a grocery store. And we need one.
Yeah, but you know why they say we don't have enough people out here?
Not enough people live here, Lily Howard says from her porch across the street. It makes things tough for residents like Howard and Varnell Middleton, who are sitting together.
Got to go way up in Garden City to get a grocery store. Don't have no car, how you gonna get up there? I know I sure can't walk with that stick up there.
That's what I told her. We can't walk to the grocery store.
So how do you get a grocery store to open? It's complicated, but Lily Howard's right.
They need people that are going to shop there, period.
Paula Chrysler is with Healthy Savannah, a group that promotes health and nutrition.
We're not talking about high rises. We're just talking about, you know, increasing the number of people in a neighborhood will get a store in there in a heartbeat.
A city's zoning ordinance affects how many people live in a neighborhood. Savannah's dates to 1960. Marcus Lotson of the Metropolitan Planning Commission says planners back then didn't account for things like food access.
We know where the food deserts are in the city of Savannah, and we think we can address some of that with zoning.
That means increasing density in some places, say allowing more units in an apartment building, in hopes more people will attract stores. It also means allowing stores where they didn't used to be, because grocery chains are trying out smaller stores.
Because some of these retailers are scaling down their size, now they can be placed in places where people live or, you know, closer to where people live.
The new ordinance also prioritizes some types of stores over others. The main road bordering West Savannah, for instance, is currently a general business zone. Under the new rules, it would be a community business zone designed to serve a community-wide market area. That allows grocery stores, but limits convenience stores and gas stations. Lotson says none of this will guarantee new grocery stores, but it could help.
We still can't control the market. you know, and say, okay, grocery store A, we need you to set up a store right here. That would be great, but all you can really do is make it easy for them.
The new zoning goes before the city council next month. If adopted, it would go into effect in September. For GPB News, I'm Emily Jones in Savannah.
And Emily Jones with us now. Emily, we heard from Paula Chrysler there with Healthy Savannah talking about increasing the number of people in a neighborhood as a first step to attracting grocery stores. She also told you cities and grocery stores may need to go out on a limb. Here she is.
You know, and maybe provide a low-income, low-interest loan through the Small Business Development Center, through the Healthy Food Financing Initiative, which is at the federal level. So if we can move that money into our community, knowing, and again, there are a lot of successful examples like that.
So, Emily, are there any other examples of retailers who go out on a limb for the community and get food into their neighborhoods?
In other cities, there definitely are. There are programs. She pointed to one, particularly in Philadelphia, where basically that exact idea she talked about, you know, getting a couple sort of grant programs and you know, organizations that can provide loans and that kind of thing to kind of join together and provide loans and provide those kinds of incentives to try and get a grocery store in. That was actually something that Marsha Buford, who you also heard in my story, there told me about an effort several years ago to try and get a grocery store in her neighborhood. And they were looking for that kind of, you know, some kind of loan, some kind of match. And that ultimately fell through. But I think there's a general sense that it's a model that has worked and that they hope could work in Savannah. Another thing that happened several years ago, a lot of people in Savannah will point to when you talk about food deserts is a grocery store, a Food Lion, opened on the west side of town, just sort of outside of the downtown area, and it failed. It closed pretty quickly. There were a lot of reasons for that, but one of the reasons that Paula Chrysler told me was they didn't accept SNAP benefits. They didn't accept, you know, what was formerly known as food stamps, which when you're trying to serve a neighborhood where a lot of people are of a lower income, qualify, rely on those benefits, you know, you have to think about things like that, and you have to offer that for people so that they can actually shop at your store.
Well, it didn't work for Food Lion, but there is a program in Savannah that will double the value of EBT cards, food stamps or SNAP benefits for people shopping in some cases. Here's Angela Guerrero talking about Farm Truck 912.
I heard about this truck, and they have varieties of different things to, you know, get my kids interested on eating, you know, different fruits and vegetables. So that's why I decided to come today. And plus on EBT, they said it's double. So it's more, I believe, like when you're on a budget, even on the food stamps, it's very good because sometimes the fruits and vegetables could be real pricey at the grocery stores.
So she said she'd heard about this truck. What is it and how does this fit into the whole conversation about getting food to people in food deserts?
Well, this truck is part of the farmers market, the Forsyth Farmers Market that we have here in Savannah, which also, I should note, the farmers market doubles EBT benefits as well. But it only happens once a week, Saturday, Forsyth Park, right in the heart of Savannah. So they have this program that also takes that same fresh produce that you can buy at the farmers market, packs it all up in a refrigerated truck, and takes it out daily throughout the rest of the week to neighborhoods that don't have grocery stores, that might have a harder time getting to the farmer's market. And also, you know, you can buy vegetables on a Tuesday as opposed to having to wait till Saturday. So they do that. They do that daily all around town. And it's, you know, and it's even the people that run this truck and that, you know, are involved with getting it funded and that kind of thing told me, like, it's kind of like a shorter term solution. Like this is a way that people are getting vegetables into these neighborhoods now. Mm-hmm. And then the city is also working. City and advocates are also working on kind of longer term solutions to get stores that will open and, you know, really provide those things every single day for people.
As GPB's Emily Jones in Savannah, she reported on how that city is using zoning laws to try and attract grocery stores in parts of town where they are most needed. GPB's Stephen Fowler also produced a story related to a mobile farmers market and food deserts. He went to a homeless shelter in Rome with an urban farm in the background. The Davies Shelter Farm has been successful in feeding its clients. Now it's looking to expand, taking extra veggies to sell out in the community using a tricked-out school bus. Let's listen.
Birds are chirping, a breeze is blowing, and chickens are clucking as a man named Lewis points to a small urban farm behind a fence.
We're out here enjoying the back door of nature.
Lewis is a resident at the William S. Davies Homeless Shelter in Rome, about 70 miles northwest of Atlanta. He helped put in those fence posts around the farm that provides some of the food at the 16-bed shelter.
It's crisp, it's very fresh, and I like the idea that it's grown with no GMOs, right? It's got natural fertilizers that they produce here.
But there's more lettuce and carrots than the shelter needs, so Executive Director Devin Smith got an idea. Take the excess veggies and sell them in places around Rome where getting fresh food is difficult. As we walk past the chickens and Blackberry the rabbit, Smith tells me the farm bus reminds her of a biblical Hebrew term, Adama, or earth.
And we talk theologically in my framework that what we eat sustains us to do the work we're called to do in the world. And so if we reshape what we eat and how we eat, that connects us more intentionally with the Creator God.
For Smith, who's a deacon in the Methodist Church, expanding access to food in Rome is more than an idea, it's a calling, and there are plenty of places that need it. Down some wooden steps to the backside of the property, 23-year-old Emmy Cornell is exploring the literal side of Adama, picking bok choy and snow peas that will be later sold on the bus. She says that there are grocery stores around Rome, IGA, Aldi, Kroger, and the like.
But then there are pockets like Maple Avenue where there are a couple convenience stores and there's really no place to get fresh food.
Less than a mile down the road from Davies on Maple Avenue sits an empty Rite Aid that once upon a time housed a Piggly Wiggly. The Davies Farm bus looks like your run-of-the-mill mode of transit as it lumbers down Rome streets. Inspired by a similarly minded colonial bread truck in Savannah, students at Barry College turned a school bus into a mobile market, adding metal brackets on the outside to hold baskets, replacing seats with a sturdy countertop and shelves, and making sure the windows open outward so you can see the fresh fare. Everything about the farm bus is done with careful intention, including where it parks, Smith says. They sold out during their first excursion to Barry College, parking next to an elementary and middle school pickup line. And today,
this is on a bus line on purpose. We have it where folks who might be coming by on the bus or on foot, it's a pretty high trafficked walking path.
It's still a relatively new undertaking. Farm manager Emmy Cornell says the staff is relying on word of mouth and the sight of a bus covered in vegetables.
I think people will come to recognize it and see it in the community and know that it is full of local produce, local products, supporting the shelter, but also local producers and other farmers around Rome.
The farm bus is gearing up for a busy summer, planning to go out Tuesdays and Thursdays across the city in places where fresh food is scarce. For GPB News, I'm Stephen Fowler in Rome.
And Stephen's in the studio with us now. Stephen, outside of the bus, what does the fresh food landscape look like in Rome?
Well, Virginia, I drove around Rome after visiting with the farm bus and saw there were the grocery stores mentioned, the IGA, the Publix, the other places, but they were in places that were easy for me to access in a car. Maple Avenue, like they mentioned in the story, actually the turn into the shelter, you have to drive past that abandoned former Piggly Wiggly, former grocery store. So, you know, it's not that there aren't grocery stores there. It's that you have to have a certain level of transportation or access to get there. And for many parts of Rome, that's easier said than done.
Yeah, similar to what we heard in Emily's story. And you did talk to a man in the shelter about the impact of the farm bus. He's one of the residents at the shelter. Let's hear him.
Because it just not only it does just so much to get us good food, but also puts a name out there to help others that may be in need at one point or another.
I'd love to hear more about the actual mechanics or productivity of the farm. How big of a footprint are we talking about to be able to feed 16-bed homeless shelter, and fill the school bus 2 days a week.
Well, so most of the stuff is fresh vegetables. There's a giant mulberry tree that hangs over one of the beds in the back that provides the fresh berries, but it's a really small footprint compared to when you think farm, you think maybe big sweeping, you know, you take a while to walk, but, you know, it's about 16, 17, 18 raised beds that they've used. This former Berry College student who runs the farm has used things like trap cropping and crop rotation and other technology and tools that she's learned to maximize the output of this for the bus to be able to go out 2 days a week to the community to not only feed the shelter, but feed the community.
Yeah. So I want to bring Emily Jones back in and ask both of you, is there anything that you learned about food access doing these stories that had never crossed your mind before? Stephen, you're right in front of me. I'll ask you first.
Well, in looking at this, you know, the term food desert and listening to Emily's story and my story, there's the institutional things that go behind access to food that are more than just there are no grocery stores or, you know, somebody needs a car to drive, that just give a different perspective. But then with my story with the farm bus, it's a homeless shelter feeding its residents and the community of just, they had a donation of the land and donation of some of the bus and donation of some of the things that, like, just the little bit of effort that went into on the front end just exponentially grown to help the community on the back end.
But not a market effort, which is an interesting point there. How about you, Emily?
You know, we keep using the term food desert, and something that some of the advocates on this issue pointed out to me when I spoke with them about this story is they really don't like that term because it kind of implies, and I mean, I use the term too, it's all of us, but, you know, it kind of implies that it's a natural phenomenon like a desert, which it's not, and it also implies that these neighborhoods are deserts, they're wastelands, and they really aren't. I mean, driving around West Savannah, it's a community. Neighbors know each other. They say hello. There's a community center. It's not a desert at all. It's a you know, vibrant neighborhood. It just doesn't have a grocery store.
Emily Jones in Savannah, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And GPB Stephen Fowler right here in Atlanta. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
Now, we were both talking about our food series that's going on right now at GPB, and you can find out more at gpb.org. That is all we have time for today. However, On Second Thought is produced by Amelia Brock, Leighton Rowell, and LaRaven Taylor. Jesse Neiswanger is our engineer. Don Smith is our dean of grammar. Amy Kiley is senior producer. Sarah Shariari is managing editor for GPB News. Interns Allison Krausman and Jake Troyer. I'm Virginia Prescott. Please join us again tomorrow for more of On Second Thought right here on GPB.